Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Hello and welcome to this breaking news episode of What Most People Think. And are you, after that spring statement, are you feeling springy? Are you feeling the bounce? I mean, we've had a few days of nice weather, and if you wanted anything to absolutely body slam that positive sentiment, it was Rachel Reeves just telling you the bad news, wasn't it? In that slightly accusatory way that she's got, I've looked at the figures. Blah, 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 blah. Has anybody checked into it? I wonder if there's a podcast listener that could check. Is her voice just Keir Starmer on 1.5 speed? You know, like when you accidentally speed up a podcast or a WhatsApp message? Is her voice just Keir Starmer on a slightly different chapo? You know, if you speed that up, I'm going to pick up Rachel Reeves. I don't know. It'd be good to do the analysis. But the point is, we've had the spring statement. Definitely wasn't an emergency. I mean, bearing in mind, it was supposed to be just her sort of like standing up going, yep, sign it. Yeah, sign it off. Those are the accounts. And then in the end, she has to do some quite significant stuff. So maybe not an emergency budget, but a slightly panicked budget. And we've got a little bit of diet austerity there. It's not like Tory austerity, because see, when Tories cut benefits, it's because they wanted to, because they hate disabled people, you see. But when Labour do it, it's okay, because they're sad about it. It's austerity. New improved austerity with added regret. It's, interesting times for Labour. I mean, look, we will get right into the guts of this, but one of the things that they're trying to say is that, you know, the world has changed. The world has changed. There are global economic headwinds. And I think only an idiot would say there hasn't been some of those. But I think certainly Labour have added to those headwinds with a giant fiscal fart of their own. Anyway, we'll get on to that. New patrons. Remember, if you are a patron, you get the podcast early, ad-free, and with bonus content. And we've got some VIP. Oh, also, you get your patron-only every single month episode. And if you're a VIP, you get a guaranteed, you ask me a question, I'll answer it. So those are the benefits. And we've got two VIPs, which is nice to see. We've got Brent R. So I'm guessing the surname is Brent. Richard Brent. Are you like David Brent's brother? Is David Brent? Oh my God, that could be like from the sort of Office multiverse. There could be a Richard Brent. Would Richard Brent be more sad than David Brent, or would he be the cool guy? Or would he be like our old friend Terry Major, John Major's brother? But you are very welcome, Mr. Brent. Maybe you work in a woke institution. You know, woke is definitely, you know, as we discussed in this week's main episode with Andrew Doyle, it's sort of in retreat, but there's certain institutions and establishments where it's not. So thoughts and prayers to those still working in universities. And we've also got Mick Myers. Mick Myers, you've got to be a fucking villain with the name Mick Myers. Mick Myers could also be rhyming slang for pliers. Yeah, that'd be great rhyming slang. Pass me the mix, will ya? The old Mick Myers, the pliers. I love celebrity slang. One of my favourites, Brad Pitt. Just going for a Brad. And then after that, I'll have a David Gower. So welcome, patrons. We've got a couple of other regular patrons who we'll mention later in the show. The main talking point, because it's an extra episode, we don't have a message from David Domain. But remember, you can email the podcast, whatmostpeoplethinkuk@gmail.com. And Richard emailed to say that I thoroughly enjoyed the Work in Progress show last night in Sheffield. Some great new material. Thank you. What's that, Richard? Do you think people should buy tickets for the main tour? Oh, very kind. He said, it's good to say hello to you in the foyer afterwards and shake your hand. You have, by the way, genuinely got a great handshake. Perfect pressure. Well, there you go. You know, sometimes there's the compliments that you didn't know you needed. I've got a perfect handshake, everybody. So, yeah, just perfect pressure. I mean, like, it, yeah. I've had years of practice. Okay, as ever, before we get into the main subject, we're going to do a thank you and a fuck you. The thank you is to my older dog, Lily. I realised, so I was on the Oh My Dog podcast with Jack D and Sean Walsh this week, and I was fairly negative about my youngest dog. As regular listeners will know, I don't like her. It's just how it is. It's okay. I love her, but I don't like her, right? But my older dog, Lily, who's now 14, absolute trooper, still up in the mornings, wants to go for walks. You know, I mean, once we get on the walk, sometimes I am getting to the point where I might have to carry her back. But she's a soldier. She's quite surly. You know, I think she's on the spectrum, maybe. I know everybody is these days, including the dogs. But she's got some sort of unusual behaviours that suggest she might be. But she's so old that earlier I had to go out the front door to come round the back garden and come in the back door, and my God, my poor dog, the way that this sort of froze her mind. She would just, so she would always sit and wait at the front door, waiting for us to return. But I came in the back door, and it was like she sort of acknowledged me. She was like, all right, mate, all right, Jeff, I'm still waiting for Jeff to come in the front door, so I'll be with you in a minute. And then she went back to staring at the front door. I was like, but that is me. I was like, shit. So I had to go back out and come in the front door just so she could do like a little factory reset. But I do love her. And I've been sort of back on the road in a sort of, you know, it's a mini tour, work in progress. So I've been in a mini sense back on the road, and I've had some sad moments. I've had, I was doing another gig, and there was another retail park. This is, I mean, just see me on the retail parks of the UK on this next tour. And I sat down to get a Pizza Hut meal, right? Because I sort of thought to myself, you got to have something healthy, Jeff. Genuinely, that is what I thought. I thought I'd have something healthy. Where's cooked? I thought I'll have the salad. Maybe I'll have two bowls of salad. And genuinely, right, how much do you think it would cost for a 9-inch pepperoni? Right? How much for a 9-inch, eh? $16.99. I felt like saying like that like Starmer for some reason. $16.99 for a pepperoni. It's a fucking joke. And that was a lot. So I thought maybe I'll look at the meal deal. And the meal deal was salad, drink, and a dessert. And that was an extra $6.99. I thought, we're now getting up to 25s here. I just wanted to fucking eat something healthy, you know, or cooked. And so I said, screw you, Pizza Hut. So I went next door to McDonald's, right? And I did actually order the McDonald's. And I thought, I'll just keep it sensible. And this is why McDonald's does well. He's like, you've gone from 25 quid to a burger and small fries next door. It was like £3.19. But you know how McDonald's do that thing now where you have to wait for your order? And you know when you're in there just at the point where the Deliveroo guys are getting all theirs. It was a shit show. I was starting to like just lose my will to live, and also there's something about waiting for your food there. It does feel like you're waiting to get methadone, which in some ways you are. And so I left there, even though I hadn't taken my order, which probably threw them into even greater chaos. And I went to the Greggs, right? And this is this is the saddest story. So I went to Greggs. There was no one else in there. I thought, I'm laughing here. People have forgotten about Greggs, you know, like they forgot about Dre once upon a time. And they didn't have much left, and they had this fucking moody slice of spicy Mexican chicken pizza. It's not really a thing, is it? But they've come up with it. And I got that, and I sat there, and I thought, well, at least it's warm. It was a bit cardboardy, and it was tepid. So I went back to the guy, and I said, could you warm this up for me? And he said, I'm not legally allowed to do that. And I almost, you know, like Michael Douglas in Falling Down. I just wanted some hot food, just some hot food. And first, it's not that you're not legally allowed to do it, mate. It's the company have said, don't do it. You know, it's not legally allowed to warm something up because your oven's only got one fucking setting, which is naught to nuclear in 5 seconds. So yeah, in the last week, I have had, you know, but look, as long as you guys come on the tour, it will all have been worth it. Me just sitting there on retail parks around the UK, crying into my fucking shitty pizza and nuggets. All right, let's talk about the spring statement. Let's talk about the prologue to this was that in the Ming Vars Labour election campaign, they didn't really promise anything, did they? And no, let's be honest, they didn't really have to. The Tories were just out there. Do you remember, Rishi, it was a weird election campaign. The more we reflect on this, it will seem like one of the weirder ones in history. Not least, I mean, I'm going off subject a little bit already here, but we didn't discuss foreign policy, even though that was going to be clearly a big thing in this parliament. Not once. No, we discussed Rishi not having an umbrella. Rishi and his relationship with Sky TV. Rishi and his relationship with Dunkirk. I mean, it was just all about Rishi making fuck-ups, right? But Labour did promise growth. In that election campaign, one of the few things they promised was growth, right? How are you going to do it? Are you going to tax more? And they're like, no, we found a third way. We're going to grow the economy. We're going to just grow it. Because previous governments, they don't try to grow the economy. Us, get us, yeah? We're going to grow the economy. It's a new idea. So that is the big backdrop. That is the petard which they were always going to get hoisted on. And then going into this spring statement, they trailed their benefit cuts. I mean, it does always make me laugh when they say that governments have trailed something. It's pretty... Trailers are normally quite fun. This spring, from Rachel Reeves and Keir Starmer, one man, one woman, one very similar voice. Benefit cuts. Austerity, the sequel. So they sort of said, we're going to make the savings through benefit cuts. But then right at the last minute, it seemed that what the savings they thought they were going to make weren't enough, so they had to do some more, right? So Reeves comes out. She's on fairly good bluster form, you know, telling people off, almost malfunctioning with her sort of you made me do this energy. She is the look what you made me do, Chancellor. You're like a parent, drop kicks a dog. Look what you made me do. And one of the problems for Labour's dominance in the chamber generally, right, is that it's disproportionate, isn't it? Labour are the big balls, tiny cock government. It's wafer thin, and it makes them seem far cockier than they should be. Now, they were a little bit chastened by this budget because they knew they were doing benefit cuts, which was never going to play out well with a lot of their MPs. But even so, there were moments where I thought, you should not seem haughty here. The hubris at one point, when they were talking about regulations, and she said, the opposition party should know that the British public is watching. I was like, yeah, we are. And you know what I'm not really looking at, particularly, is the Tories and the Lib Dems. I'm looking at you because you're the government, and it's quite early into the piece. I mean, they have been doing increasingly as well, Labour. You know, it shows that they're under pressure. They sort of say, well, what would you do? Yeah, I think that's quite a weak question 9 months into a government. What would you do? That sounds like an under pressure guy that's organised a stag do, and it's the first day it's shit. And well, what would you let's do? Yeah, no one else stood up. But, oh my God, there's a long way to go. The Tories, as I've discussed, are so far from power. It's a weird question to ask. So there was a lot. There was a lot in it about, you know, regulations, cutting regulations, which is a good thing, and re-announcing stuff they'd already done. But the headline was always going to be that moment when they said that growth is halved this year from 2%, right? 2%. When the Tories left office, it was the fastest growing economy in the G7. And look, other economies have had theirs shaved down as well, but 2% to 1%. As I said, you know, global headwinds have mattered, but there was Labour's messaging when they got in office of just depressing the living fuck out of everyone. It's terrible. There's no money. Oh, tough times ahead. It's going to be a cold winter. You know, just salt your beef and hibernate because there shall be no sun. I wonder, right? So let's turn this question around. Rather than you accuse Labour of getting that messaging wrong and crashing consumer and business confidence, if you ask them, if you had your time again, would you strike a slightly more positive note? And I think if they were being honest, they probably would.
What most people think.
And as you'd expect from the bingo card, we heard not as much as from Starmer, but we heard a bit of 14 years, 22 billion. 14 years. 22 billion. I'll say it again. I don't think the 22 billion is playing out with the public like they think it is. 14 years, as I said, genius smoke move. 14 years of chaos, it wasn't. Certainly the first 5 years had less ministerial resignations than a lot of governments. But it's worked. 22 billion. I just think that the public's memory is shorter now. In the age of social media, people are moving on quickly. They want the 22 billion to be their equivalent of the letter that was left by Liam Byrne in the Treasury saying there's no money. It's not 2010 anymore, Dorothy. You're not in Kansas, love. If people have moved on, I just, 22 billion. It just, okay, but I just don't think it's going to land. The political cycle moves on so quickly. I always use the example, remember crumbly concrete? Wasn't that long ago. Crumbly concrete, biggest story in the country. We're never going to stop talking about that. Mention it now, it seems like something from another age, okay? So the 22 billion shelf life is already approaching. And they kind of rushed through all the bad news, but then spent ages talking about their changes to regulations, right? Which I kind of get. It's kind of a It's what the Tories should have done. So it was hard for the Tories to sit there getting sort of ideologically cucked in front of their faces, like Labour going, this is how you service regulations. but it would add, what would it add? I think it's going to add 0.3% to the economy by 2029. And in fairness, right, it doesn't sound much and it's not that much, but you know, but the OBR did say it would be the highest kind of impact of something that didn't have a cost to it. So, you know, let's give credit there. But also let's talk about the bad news, okay? When you drill into the figures here, at the end of this government, right, by 2029, the average person is going to be £700 better off by 2029. 5 years to get £700 better off. That is shit. That is shit. And in the final year with the OBR estimates, right, so the OBR halves growth and then going forward, they kind of upgraded it, but not as much as it was halved, but, you know, they upgraded it. Whether or not it's accurate, it's much harder the further ahead you go to work out what the fuck is going to happen. But in the final year of the parliament, I think, they predicted growth of 1.8%. Yippee! 1.8%. That's not high growth, is it? By the final year, after all the stuff Labour are going to do, going to be the fastest growing economy, the G7. Well, I don't know what else is going on in the G7, Keir. Because I suspect 1.8% isn't going to be it. We're not going to make us top of the league. Do we need to just accept in Britain that we're like one of those tennis players that carries on playing, but we're never going to win like a tournament? Like if we make like the semi-finals of the Dubai Open, that'll like be a really good season. You know, Andy Murray at the end, you're going, you've done some great things in the past. Maybe just accept now. Just play with your kids. Play with your kids in the garden, Britain, because you're never going to get the glory days back again. There were certain inconsistencies in the Labour message, right? They talked about global pressures, but they wanted, of course, to mention the mini budget. The mini budget by Liz Truss, crashing the economy. Did they say that? They probably did. You know, they literally didn't crash the economy. It didn't. It did a lot of, you know, it caused a lot of turmoil and uncertainty, but it objectively did not crash the economy. It's kind of funny because they all got very upset about Mel Stride's response. The Shadow Chancellor, by the way, in case people didn't know, and that's probably why would you? But they got quite upset that he repeatedly was saying that Rachel Rees had fiddled the numbers. She'd fiddled them. He kept saying fiddled. And they were getting very angry about fiddled. Fiddled. He's saying fiddled. Fiddled's a bad word. Fiddled's a naughty word. Well, to, you know, a lot of the public watching, austerity is about. I know it's not specifically austerity, but you know what I mean? Cuts are a bad thing. But yeah, you get upset about the fiddling. But they quoted Labour. They were talking about international pressures and, you know, the headwinds. But they also quoted inflation peaking at 11% under the Tories. So you go, well, yeah, what you mean after the pandemic and after the cost of living crisis and after the end of quantitative easing and after the war in Ukraine? I mean, either all this matters or none of it matters. But, you know, I guess the older you get, you realise that's the game of politics. It's just a sort of a musical chairs of hypocrisy. The thing that would be really tough for the left is, you know, these numbers, because it's always one, you know, like their first budget unravelled slowly. This unravelled quite quickly. People were digging into the numbers and, you know, there's quite hard reading for people on the left there is that, well, for anybody really, is that it's going to, you know, push, 3.5 million households, or it's going to affect them negatively, the disability changes, by 1,700 quid a year, which is a lot. And there's also that 250,000 people were, this is by their own impact assessment, which, by the way, conveniently just comes out on the day so people can't do the pre-reading, which is, was that fiddly? It feels a bit fiddly. But it's going to push 250,000 people into relative poverty. Now, this is tricky because you expect me to climb into Labour here, but I've always had a problem with these. I think the public understand the word poverty in one way, right? Is that you do not have enough money for the basics to heat, eat, you know, roof over your head, all that kind of stuff. Relative poverty is always a slightly weird idea where it's based against the 60% of the median income. It's just not. Maybe I'm guilty of getting into semantics now, but what it then means is that the press can run headlines about just poverty. And the Tories basically suffered from this as well, was that I think over the course of the Tory government, maybe it changed after the pandemic, but absolute poverty went down, but relative poverty went up. So the poverty that the public would think of as poverty went down, but the poverty that would slightly surprise the public with its definition went up. Now, they should all be going down, right? But I just think it's not the same, is it? It's an emotive word, but it's still a striking number, 250,000 people. Basically, the long and the short of it is a lot of people are going to be in a worse position. And of that 250,000, 50,000 are going to be children. But, you know, I do have some sympathy for Labour seizing the nettle here, because as Rachel Reeves quoted, 1,000 people a day are qualifying for PIP. 1,000 people a day. I mean, are we that ill and depressed? Jesus Christ, that is a lot. You know, and, you know, it's partly because I think 9 out of 10 assessments are done online. I mean, literally, I'm not saying all people are abusing it. I'm saying if you are abusing it, it's a lot easier when you can put in your own fucking virtual background. I would make it like a little Hollywood show. I'd have prosthetics. I'd have the whole thing going on. I'd have like, I'd hire the team that did the original E.T. I mean, it's just, you've got to do these things in person. And so I have some sympathy for Labour there. You have to, you know, this graph of, you know, the amount of people who are economically inactive, the amount of people that are claiming out of work benefits, sickness benefits, depression, all that stuff, you've got to take it on. But it is kind of interesting to see it being Labour that are doing this. And we'll come on to that in a minute with the response from Mel Stride. You know, the fact that the Tories are sort of telling them off for heartlessness. You're like, I know it gets overused, but we are through the looking glass, people. We are through the looking glass. But, you know, it's all changed around. It's musical chairs. Labour briefing negatively against the OBR. But this is like, this is the kickback from when they were so gleeful after the catastrophic trust budget, wouldn't they? So we will never question the OBR. The OBR, my mother used to say, if your friend put your head in an oven, would you? And when it comes to the OBR, I say, yes, we would. Okay, just have say hello to a couple more patrons here. Patang Nubly Brown. Patang. Now, you might think, because that name sounds like you might have a different heritage. I wouldn't mock it, but I am going to mock it. Patang. Patang sounds like one of those kind of like top-selling hot sauces you get. You know, when you go to another country, you just find out that like that's their Heinz tomato ketchup. You got to have some Patang on that, mate. You got to have some Patang. Nubly Brown. Nubly Brown's a good name. The Nubly Browns. That sounds like a... If you were in a Roald Dahl novel, you'd be the kindly neighbours that the little kid who's been... Not properly abused, but psychologically abused goes to. The Nubly Browns. Or maybe it's like a Paddington 3, as the Paddingtons then become... The Brown family then become like a blended family. It becomes really woke and like they... Because there was already a new Mrs. Brown in that. Maybe Mr. Brown sacks her off. He goes on holiday... Has a bit of Patang on his hot dog, and he meets some woman whose surname is Nubly. And then the next Paddington, they go even deeper into the immigration message. We've also got Chris Newton. So we've gone from an incredibly exotic name to just Chris Newton. Chris Newts. Newts. Do you like that name? Chris Newts? C. Newts? Chris Newton sounds like you're a test driver for Red Bull. You know one of those guys? So he's out, Chris Newton, he's out there in the bars saying he's a Formula One driver. But don't Google it. That's what Chris Newton has to say. Babe, I'm a Formula... But don't Google, because I'm a Formula One driver. Like, I'm a test driver, but, you know, I'm kind of better than the real guys. That's why they use me. Chris Newton. Cool name, Chris. Cool name. Welcome to the Patreon community. I'm sure you are never to be found in dodgy bars. I bet you're giving it there. I'm Chris Newton, Red Bull test driver. And it's like, all right, why are you at Curry Club? Okay, just give a bit of love to some tour dates that are on sale. As I say, Tring is now on sale. It wasn't on sale originally, going back to Bristol. Stevenage, where I did Basic Bloke, filmed the first one. Southend, Worthing, Southampton, Cardiff. There's also the Leeds City Variety dates is on sale. October 12th. October 12th, Leeds City Varieties. It'd be great to see people there. Brighton, back at the Old Market on October the 19th. Back in Milton Keynes, which is ironically one of my best-selling places, which is basically the people of Milton Keynes just trolling me, but as long as they keep giving me money, I'll accept it. And there's a new date, another London date. So the second date has gone on sale. November the 13th at Leicester Square Theatre. Listen, if you haven't been, I think it's one of the best venues in the country. Bang smack in the heart of London's West End. And I'll tell you this... Again, I'm going to mention price here. One of the cheapest West End tickets you'll find anywhere. Stick that on the fucking poster. What most people think. All right, let's talk about the response now, because it sort of reminds you that Tories are the opposition. Hasn't felt like that recently, with their modest little League One following, as I call it. The amount of MPs they've got, it does feel really League One. I think once you've got 300 MPs and above, that's Premiership. 200 to 250 is sort of like a decent Championship club. But 120, that's proper League One. Maybe like a League One side, like, you know, like Bolton or Reading, with recent Premiership pedigree, but that's kind of their following in the Commons. So it's difficult for them with Labour just making noise and going, oh, he said fiddle. So Mel Stride stood. So I was listening to this on the radio. Mel Stride, the Shadow Chancellor, stood up. He's quite rated in Tory circles. When everyone hated Rishi, he would go out to bat. He was like the sort of Jeffrey Boycott. He'd just go out there and he wouldn't have anything. I'll back Rishi. So he was a sort of old dependable, and the substance of what he was saying was good, right? He just sounded knackered. I don't know what it was. I don't know if he's been a bit ill or something, or maybe he's got an older voice. He's not like that old, but he just sounded fucked, man. But he, you know, he pointed out that Labour had held back the impact assessment to bury bad news. He basically went in on all the stuff that you should have done about, you know, pushing back on the idea that Labour are the victim of global circumstances and actually, you know, suggesting that they were actually the architects of it, which to a large extent they were. And he also pointed out that they hadn't included the effects on business of their employee Bill of Rights or whatever mad shit Donald Trump's going to do. So it kind of is interesting. It was an interesting moment to go, oh, yeah, they are still the official opposition. This is their guy. He's probably the best guy in that available. Maybe the Tories should be able to bring in ringers. You know, like when you've got a Sunday football team and you're struggling a bit for numbers, you just ring around some good players and everyone goes, oh, that player, fucking class, he's a ringer. Just bring back Cameron, you know, every once in a while, just do little guest appearances. I mean, he did a very good cameo as foreign secretary. Look, I'm completely gone off the point here. David Cameron as foreign secretary, I was very happy with that. I still think that Starmer should have stuck with that. Gone rogue and said, I'm going to have a Tory in that job. He's that good. He's that posh. He's got enough sense of entitlement that things should go his way that I think he should be working for the government. Which other cameos could they have? This could be a good one to write in for. Is Tebbit still alive? A bit of Tebbit. Maybe even a bit of Spreadsheet Phil. Everybody forgot about Spreadsheet Phil Hammond. You know, and it's interesting in a way is that in this week, so More in Common did a poll which found, so a lot of the polls have sort of had Reform first or second with Labour around mid-20s, Tories low-20s. And then this poll finds that the Tories have just edged ahead. But essentially, it's a three-way tie, right? But the Tories, you know, on 25%. I mean, this is how far they've fallen. They are fucking breaking out the bubbly for 25%. guys, all right, let's just calm down, everybody. This is CCHQ. They're going, look, we just calm down. But look, I think if we carry on the way we are, we could be hitting 27% in 6 months. Oh, shut up. No, we could do it. But I do wonder, you know, with one of the impacts of people's poor memory for political events, I wonder if the time it takes for the public to forget about how much they dislike the Tories could be a smaller shelf life. I mean, Reform, look, don't get me wrong, Reform are still in their storming phase and they will do well at the at the local elections, because as we discussed with Andrew Doyle, they have got the best name, right? But what I wonder is as people dial into them, certainly the working class vote, there's another risk here, right? Because there could be a desire as the economy stagnates and people just remain poorer. Left-wing economics could come in hard all of a sudden. Now, the problem with left-wing economics is over the last few years, it's always been kind of championed by the kind of people that working class people generally tend to find irritating, you know, Jeremy Corbyn's, people like that. But what if they just add like a, you know, Nigel Farage, but left-wing? How about that? Because the thing with Nigel Farage, a lot of the people that like him might be expecting him to do left-wing stuff were he in power or in coalition. Would he want to? You know, if you look at his history, he would probably want to regulate less. He would want to tax less. So I think the Tories could recover some, you know, there might be right-wing Lib Dem voters that suddenly think, yeah, fuck, this is shit under Labour. You know what I mean? It was fun, Lib Dems, but you're kind of, you're the fuck buddy of British politics. You're not really, I'm never introducing you to my family, okay? And similarly, you know, up north, There might be a period once reform have to start saying what they do, that people might find that what they do won't be economically left-wing enough for people in red wall type seats. So this is just a sort of closing thought here. Is Labour sort of fail to be left-wing? People always talk about the rise of the far right. I wonder if over the next 3 years, like a real hard left economic version might emerge. And if it's fronted by, you know, people like Eddie Dempsey, you know, like a one or a Mick Lynch or somebody like that. I just feel like the way people feel about the two main parties and what, you know, how they're going to respond to being skint, or sorry, in 2029, they're going to be £700 better off. There is a space for some fairly hard left politics to come in. Okay, ended up in a slightly different space there to what I expected. But what do you think? Was the analysis fair? Was it fair to the government? Was it fair to the Tories? Was it fair to reform? Email whatmostpeoplethinkuk@gmail.com. As we're talking... Oh, by the way, I'm recording this on Thursday, so I'm back on Times Radio tomorrow night on Friday. I'm going to be back without interruption now for, I think, 3 or 4 weeks. So do... join me there, but we will be back next week with a main show. I think Simon Evans is on the show, so after Andrew Doyle, another one of the, well, it's something for the What Most People Think faithful. All right, have a good weekend.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.